Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess this evening. As always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a group of people who believe in our founders' vision and know that they, too, are this nation. We have a topic tonight, ladies and gentlemen, that I think touches a chord with just about everybody. Failure and success, learning for life. If we were asked which taught you more, your failures or your successes, my guess is that most of us would say our failures taught us way more than our successes did. Because when we failed at something, we had two choices: to get back up and try it again and maybe work a little harder at it the second time, or to give up, tell ourselves we were no good, and look for something easy because we knew we would have success at it, even though it might not be of value to us or anyone else. One of the problems that we face in public education that is going to have a long-term effect on this nation and its future is the public school system's unwillingness to allow children to actually fail. Everything from telling every child that everybody loves them and everybody always will, to everybody deserves a trophy for participating, for trying, to it's always something or somebody else that's at fault when you don't succeed. All of these sugar-coated lies are creating a generation of children who will eventually, if they live long enough, become legally adults. And the world will come crashing in on them because they will have failures. We all do. We all try things at which we are hoping to succeed and discover that we didn't work hard enough, or we don't have the talent or skill required to be successful, or circumstances prevented our surmounting obstacles. These failures, if we have no experience of them, are going to be devastating for this upcoming generation of proto-adults. If you fail at something, and you do not have the opportunity to understand why you failed and understand what you could do better, how are you going to find the reserves of courage and strength to face life with all of its risks? The only way to avoid failure, ladies and gentlemen, is to do absolutely nothing at all for your entire life. And that in itself is a failure to use this gift of life we've been given. Today, we had a guest at our school who was demonstrating ways to spark teaching in English classrooms. And as a result, the English teachers in all three grades of the middle school where I work were attending or listening to or observing this gentleman's classroom protocols. So that meant that I covered four different teachers today. And one of them, one of the substituting jobs I was doing, was being a judge for a competition, if you will, as a stepping stone to further competitions in public speaking. The students were given an assignment to create a presentation on how to do something or other. They were to present their talk, and they were being judged based on several different rubric requirements. Did they make eye contact with their audience? Were they good speakers? Did they have long pauses? Did they appear articulate? Did they explain the process clearly? Did they use visual aids or props? And how well, if they did those visual aids or props explain the method of doing the task they were illustrating? I was one of the judges, as was another teacher. The main judge was a lady from the 4-H Club, and this presentation today was a stepping stone to go on to regional or state or county presentations and eventually perhaps take home a prize. Well, the prizes or the awards given today were 99% participation ribbons. In other words, no matter how poorly you did, you got a ribbon. Everybody gets a trophy for participating. The five top presenters were to receive a blue ribbon. I don't know, since I only covered this competition for one period today, what the final result was and who got the blue ribbon and who got the participation ribbon, but there were about 40 children participating. They were sixth graders. And I'm guessing there were that the five who got the blue ribbons earned them. The 35 who got green ribbons participated. To a 12-year-old child, 11 or 12-year-old child, a ribbon or a prize means you did well at something. In effect, the 35 who got a ribbon were being told, in order not to hurt their feelings, that they did well, even though they may not have. I tend to be a rather strict judge when it comes to things like this, because I do understand, having lived long enough to experience it, how important it is to be articulate and clear when you are explaining a process to someone that they are then going to have to do on their own. And when you do explain it well, you have exhibited a skill that will be very important in later life, because I don't know of any person, particularly any person who actually has children, who will not have to explain to someone someday how to do something. And learning how to do this in an effective way is very important. If you're given a ribbon for participating, and that's all you really did, what have you learned? You've been given a success that doesn't mean anything. It kind of reminds me of an episode in Robert Heinlein's book, Starship Troopers, where the young protagonist is in a class called History and Moral Philosophy, and the teacher gives him a piece of paper that says he won first prize in the 50-yard dash. And the young man becomes indignant and basically throws it on the floor and says, "You're mocking me. You know I only came in third." And the history teacher says, "Exactly. You did not earn this first prize, so it doesn't mean anything." If we don't let our kids fail and understand that they have failed, and also learn that failure does not mean you go out and slit your throat because you're no good at anything, how are they going to be responsible citizens of this nation? I believe it was Thomas Edison, how he was asked by a reporter that was interviewing him after the electric light bulb became, you know, world news. "Well, Mr. Edison," the reporter apparently said, "I've heard that you tried 96 times and failed to invent this light bulb. Why did you keep going? Didn't all those failures defeat you?" And Edison said, "Well, I didn't fail. I just discovered 96 ways not to make an electric light bulb." Edison's willingness to see failure as a means of learning is not being illustrated in today's classrooms. It isn't the failing that lowers a child's self-esteem and self-worth, ladies and gentlemen. It is the artificial inflation of his self-worth that creates problems in later life. I learned more from the mistakes that I made than I have learned from my successes. And I've had my share of both. One of the reasons that I make a good teacher, I believe, is because I have failed at things. Not necessarily purely academic things, although there were a couple of those. And the failures I earned because I didn't do the work required to pass. And I knew it. So that failure basically taught me way more than an easy success could have. And it is this understanding that builds character. This ability to surmount the obstacle of a failure and either try harder and succeed at the task the next time or choose a new path where you can put your effort in and see some success. We have a nation, ladies and gentlemen, of people who are afraid of failure. That is not necessarily a bad thing. Fear is a built-in brake on our ability to take risks that actually have a chance of succeeding. It is right to be concerned enough about failure that you will work hard to avoid it. It is not right, however, to let fear of failure cripple you and lock you up in a nice, padded, comfortable, well-fed jail cell because that fear tells you do not even try. I have seen over and over the long-term effects of not teaching a child that failure is something from which to learn, not something that destroys your ability. I have seen over and over and over again students in collaborative classes who have been told they're doing well and got A's on their report card when their skill level is 2, 3, or even 4 grade levels below the actual grade in which they are registered. And these children go out into the world with a high school diploma that looks wonderful. And they can't hold a job at McDonald's because they can't figure out how to count back change. I had an adult student for whom that was the case. And this was 20 years ago. This avoidance of failure because it makes you feel bad is undermining this nation's ability to rebound from disasters and difficulties and struggles that being alive as an individual and being alive as a country will require of us. My parents were part of the greatest generation, as it is now called, those men and women who put forth their lives on the line to stop tyranny during the Second World War. They didn't accept failure as don't ever try again. They were taught that failure meant you had to work harder the next time. If they had not been taught this in the public schools of the 30s and 40s, the first repulse would have chased our airmen out of Great Britain and backed our Navy to the bottom of the sea. We would never have come back from the devastation in Pearl Harbor. We never would have had the courage as a nation to invade Europe and keep on going no matter what until Germany was forced to surrender. And we would never have kept on fighting in the Pacific after defeat, after defeat, after defeat, and freed Japan from warlords in modern uniforms who were sending basically children to kill themselves in war. My friend Cal in the chat room is asking a question about Common Core was started by Mike Huckabee. I don't think so, California Living. I have never heard this. It's my understanding that the Common Core as a phrase and as a concept began with the combination of the Federal Department of Education and the ideas supported with Bill Gates's money. I don't know. My friend Cal says that the word around the Republican Party is that this is true. I have not heard it, so I can't say aye, yes, or no. It may be that the phrase was coined by Mike Huckabee in his abortive run for the presidency. It may be that a common set of standards, so that every student in every public school in every state would be held to the same standards as every other child in the country, in the sense that reading skills were supposed to be equivalent for, say, fourth grade, whether you went to school in Texas, California, Oregon, or New York. I'm not an expert on Common Core. I know a bit about it, and I know what its aims are now. But I do not know for a fact that the current concept of Common Core and its links to people like George Soros and Bill Gates and the federalization of our public schools, I doubt very much whether that concept, that end-run goal, was created by Governor Huckabee. I don't know. And believe me, you aren't interrupting at all there. If I can answer a question, I will. If I can't, I'll tell you that too. And I do the same thing in any classroom. The understanding of what the purpose of education is has been repackaged and rebranded and renamed and changed over and over and over again since this nation began. The founding fathers understood that education was the surest pathway to success, material success, and social success, because many of them were self-educated people. And at the time when they lived, education beyond learning basic reading skills and basic ciphering skills was the prerogative of the rich. And they understood that if we were to have a functioning republic, we needed an educated citizenry. Their ideas about public education were directed toward access and opportunity to obtain it, not necessarily the perfect educational paradigm for everybody. They were incredibly bright and incredibly well-read men, and they understood bone deep, as unfortunately many people don't today, that trying to make education uniform and expecting children to be uniform in response is an impossible dream. They also, to get back to tonight's topic, understood what it meant to fail. Many of them had, over and over and over again. And yet, they kept going. When we teach children academic skills, what we're doing is trying to give them the tools they will need to learn throughout their lives. You don't stop learning when you graduate from high school or get your bachelor's degree or your master's degree or your PhD, especially in today's technologically burgeoning world. All of you who predate cell phones and GPSs and computers, all of us old folk, know that we've had to learn a great many new skills in order to deal with this technological revolution that's been going on for the last 25 to 30 years. Tools and accesses and thinking patterns have changed radically since I was in school myself. And because that's the case, I am extremely grateful that I was taught to be a lifelong learner. I've had to be. What I'm doing right now, ladies and gentlemen, was science fiction when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. If I had not been taught to learn from my failures. If I had given up and basically turned my back because I got a D in Algebra 1, which I did, I would probably never have gone on to college or gotten my master's degree or been able to figure out how to do what I'm doing tonight. I have to learn something new just about every single day, okay? Because there's something new on the horizon every minute. The correlation between being allowed to fail and being a lifelong learner is very, very clear to me. Everyone has had failures. Everyone has had successes. How we view those failures and successes depends a lot on our personality and our experience. A good teacher tries to inculcate in his or her students the understanding that your success or your failure is your responsibility, not the kid next to you who talked during the test, not the guy down the street who is a better baseball player than you are, not the fact that you have difficulty understanding mathematical concepts and everybody else in class seems to get it when you don't. It's up to you. We were taught that if something was hard for you, didn't mean you didn't have to learn it or do it. It meant you had to work harder, maybe, than your guy sitting next to you to master whatever the skill was. I've mentioned before, and it's worth repeating, that my husband was dyslexic. Learning to read was very, very difficult for him. But fortunately, he was diagnosed in a time when a learning disability didn't mean, that's okay, honey, you can't help it, here's an A for participating. He was diagnosed when parents and teachers said, yes, this is hard for you. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you're going to have to work really, really hard to master it. And he did. Because he understood, by their example and by their precept, that because something is difficult doesn't mean you turn your back on it. It means you've got to work harder to get it. If you can't get that across to children, then you are not teaching them the lifelong learner skills that they need. A trophy for being there teaches children nothing. A trophy for achieving teaches a child that work has benefits. It's been in the news lately that our current president is circumventing Congress and violating the Constitution again by an executive order that federal workers' minimum wage will be raised to $10.10 per hour, and basically haranguing everybody else in the country that they need to do it too. Because he's not interested in actually having people work for a living. He is interested, just like the public schools are, in creating a sugar-coated lie that it doesn't matter whether you're any good at something or not. You deserve to be compensated for whatever skill level you had equally with everybody else who's doing the same thing, even if their skill level is greater than yours. That may work in his world, ladies and gentlemen, but it doesn't work in the real world. Without the opportunity to fail, children will never understand what competence really is. When their standards are set so low that even a limbo champion can't get low enough to make them work, how will competence in the workforce or innovation in the workforce ever arise? Over and above the loss of entry-level jobs, this ridiculous assumption that everybody is worth the same amount of money no matter what skill level they have is just recycled Fabian socialist, pardon my expletive, crap from about 1895. You're not allowed to fail. You're not allowed to have to do something that's difficult. Everything must be easy. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody is equal, meaning everybody is the same. Anyone who has a functioning brain, if they take the time, will see through this. But our kids are being taught to turn their brains off. They are taught that the only purpose life has is to exist. That just being alive should guarantee you peace, happiness, joy, comfort, wealth, gadgets, home, car, HDTV, smartphone, you name it. I'm here, so I deserve all those things. And it's that narcotic, ladies and gentlemen, not Marx's famous religion is the opiate of the masses. It's socialist propaganda that is the opium of the masses. Because what it does, it tells every single citizen of this nation from 5 years old up that you don't have to actually try to be good at anything because somebody owes you everything you want. My friend Cal says, the USA might as well pull out of the Olympics since you have to, there's only one person who's going to get a gold medal, except for that one tie, I think, in ski jumping or something. So everybody else should just go home. And that's pretty much the way our kids are being taught. You're rewarded for showing up. No, world doesn't reward you for showing up. The world expects you to show up. You don't get rewarded for being there. You get rewarded for putting forth effort and succeeding because you have done so. The current prevailing theory, and I've read several learned educational experts who have spouted it, is that if a child fails in school, it causes them self-esteem problems, which will create a psychologically crippling effect when they reach adulthood. Well, this is more socialist propaganda crap, because if that were the case, we wouldn't have electric light bulbs, ladies and gentlemen. we wouldn't have the theory of relativity, because good old Albert flunked math over and over and over again. It wasn't the doorbell, Cal, it was the telephone. Sorry about the interruption, folks. My friend Linda mentions that it's only about 2% of the population that actually receives only minimum wage. I don't know for a fact, because I haven't researched it, but it wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. Most people who are working, who are employed full-time, if they started at minimum wage, they didn't stay there, because their abilities, their skills, their progress, their learning curve was such that they were soon worth more than minimum wage because they had attained more skills. Your employer doesn't pay you. My friend Cal says it sounds better as a joke with a pizza. He's right. I wish it were Domino's, but I live way out in the country and they don't deliver to me. I got to go and get it. And unless you guys want to hear dead air for the next hour, I'm afraid I'm going to have to sit here and be without pizza. But anyway, the understanding that you advance in any area of expertise or activity only if you learn more. The athlete who learns to play baseball when he's 7 in Little League, if his skills don't ever improve past the beginner level of a 7-year-old in Little League, I doubt very much whether he's going to be on a professional baseball team. And yet, we encourage our kids to believe that this is the case by setting up academic scholarships that reward players who have skills that are excellent in sports, but should they somehow be injured or incapable of playing, wind up on the street because they can't read. They have been passed through classes because they make the team look good in high school and in college. And then in the first practice in the pros, they tear up their knees, and too bad, bye-bye, contract null and void, now what do I do? Again, it's the wrong view of failure and success, ladies and gentlemen. We can't teach our kids if we don't allow them to understand that they are responsible for the learning part. My friend Cal asked, what will happen to higher learning? Will they continue to teach the reality or go to the wayside calling it because it's against Common Core? Basically, you're going to wind up with people who are attending higher learning institutions, colleges, and universities as a form of vocational training and politically correct thinking indoctrination, because they are not going to have the academic skills that allow them to go beyond the rote kind of get the answer right on the test, get the right grade, graduate, get a piece of paper that says I have a bachelor's degree so I can get into this particular niche in society that I've been trained for and stay there until I either retire or die or both. It's the mechanical view of human beings that Fabian socialists, progressives, whatever they want to call themselves, the Borg collective, have that is the most dangerous aspect of our public education right now. I've mentioned before on this show the oxymoronic paradigm of education in public schools. Teachers and administrators are being told that they must present information in a way that each and every child, no matter his or her learning ability, difficulties, skills, whatever, will accomplish or complete a set body of knowledge within a given chronological period. And if everybody doesn't, then obviously it's the teacher's fault. And my friend Cal, that's when you really pay for your education. And basically, that's what you do. You're paying for your education under Common Core by being an obedient cog in the bureaucratic wheel set up by the Fabian socialist elite so that every single one of us has his own treadmill to generate the energy to keep them comfortable. And it is that mechanistic approach that is being forced down the throats of your children's teachers and the administrators of their schools. It is impossible, ladies and gentlemen, to achieve what public school teachers are being told to do. And my friend California Living is exactly correct. Cal says, my real belief is that when a child goes through Common Core, they will look for a government job and make it a career for life with benefits. Since who that has a government job really works. And you're correct. And that's the aim. It's the society as a machine thinking pattern of Fabian socialist, liberal, progressive, Marxist, whatever you want to call them. Okay? It's hard to find a single defining term because they call themselves something different with every new generation of voters. But it's the approach to humanity that sees us as members of a collective body and not individuals. This nation was founded, ladies and gentlemen, by men who were individuals. Rugged individualist is the very best description of every single one of the founding fathers. Because no two of them ever really agreed 100% on anything. It is amazing that they managed to put together the Constitution under which this nation has lived for 200 plus years. But they did it because they understood that it was not possible to make it perfect, but it was possible to make it as good as they possibly could, even if they had to compromise and work it out and figure out ways to balance things. Because they knew that the only real thing that was of value was individual liberty. Because upon individual liberty is based every innovation, every item and iota of progress and creation that humankind has managed to achieve over its existence. Committees don't invent things, ladies and gentlemen. My friend Linda says, without this evil progression, the system will collapse really soon anyway, and she's likely quite correct, because it's become top-heavy. Because it has persisted in believing in an impossible and foolish and wicked illusion that somehow or other human beings are evolving into godhood, and if they just subvert and coerce and bribe and threaten enough, they will get every member of the species who manages to remain alive under their eugenic mindset to obediently do exactly what that individual is told to do under all circumstances. And we will have peace and love and brotherhood. And we will all go, not so silently, or maybe so silently, down into dust as a species. Human beings are not machines, ladies and gentlemen, because machines only fail when a part needs replacing. Machines do not feel. Machines do not love. Machines do not care. And it is in this machine universe that liberal, progressive, Fabian, socialist, Marxist, whatever, want us to live. And one way to make this machine universe sound and seem attractive is to promise that nobody will ever suffer failure. Everyone will have enough to eat, to wear, a place to live, comforts, entertainment, self-esteem, feel good, everybody loves you, heavenly hugs 24/7. Because they will make sure, through the medium of the almighty government, that anybody who doesn't believe this wonderful dream and doesn't work towards its fulfillment will be eliminated. And we will all be happy in our little gulags, on our little treadmills, generating the energy to keep the progressive philosopher kings comfortable and able to pat themselves on the back on the peaceful, loving world they have created. I am not a pessimist, ladies and gentlemen. I am an optimist. When you teach, you have to be. If you're a pessimist, do not go into education as a profession, because you won't last longer than about, maybe 6 months. If you're a pessimist, you'll give up after the first marking period, because you will have worked your tail parts off trying to convey that 2 plus 2 equals 4 to a group of 30 or 40 or 50 or 150 or 200 kids, and find out that 25% of them will understand it and leap to 2 plus 2 equals 4. Well, that must mean 2 plus 2 plus 2 equals 6. 25% will remember the 2 plus 2 equals 4, and 25% will get it right half the time, and the other 25% will have no clue what 2 is, let alone 2 plus 2 is 4. And the basic nature of humanity, that we come all sorts with different skill levels, different cognitive abilities, will have you feeling so defeated that you will run like crazy and go find a nice, old, happy nursery company where you can dig ditches and you don't have to worry about it. As I say, I'm an optimist. You have to be to teach. I believe sincerely that the human spirit, no matter how much it's pummeled and poked and squished and put into little niches and smothered with pillows, will survive. Every regime that has attempted what our current progressive administration is trying to do has failed miserably, and this one will fail too, because it will paint itself into a corner, as every other socialist type regime has. As Margaret Thatcher said, the trouble with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money. It happened in the Soviet Union. It happened in Eastern Europe. It happened in the Transcendentalist colony in New England in the 1870s, for heaven's sake. It happened at Jamestown in 1607. It's people like us, ladies and gentlemen, like Cal and Bill and Linda and Yolanda and Ron and Michael Magic and all the folks who join Patriot families. It's people like us who are going to stand up and say, no, this doesn't work. No, this is wrong. No, I don't believe you. Who will bring this to an end? When, I cannot say. It probably won't be very speedy. It will probably take a major collapse. And there will be suffering. There will be failure. Ah, my God, we can't have that. Things can't fail. Those who have understood and learned from failure will be the ones who rebuild after collapse. And there are lots of them out there who aren't elderly reactionaries like me. And I'm sure there are probably a bunch of liberals out there who are happy to put that little label on my back. It's fine with me. You can call me anything you want, so long as it's not late for dinner. But I think that the inevitable cycle will play itself out. It always does. And to many people, seeing that or thinking that is pessimistic. I don't believe it is. I believe it's optimistic. Because as is taught in the Tao Te Ching, what goes around comes around over and over and over again. Everything is a cycle. The cycle of the seasons, the cycle of birth, youth, maturity, age, and death. For every living thing. And everything that living things create. There was a time when people assumed that the invention of the automobile would cause devastation across the entire world, because what would happen to all the horses and the blacksmiths and the farriers and so on and so forth? Well, we still have plenty of horses, and we have blacksmiths, and we have farriers, and we have horse shows and Olympic events that feature horses, and we have horse races, both ridden and sulkies. It didn't kill off all the horses because they were unneeded. Change happens, ladies and gentlemen, and we adapt to change because that's how we survive. Any species that cannot adapt to change will not survive. And to adapt to change, you have to have learned how to fail and get on your feet and go on in spite of it. If the first three times striking the rocks didn't make a spark, Homo sapiens and Neanderthal would have died off and the world would belong to the cockroaches. We cannot create a living society, ladies and gentlemen, if we teach our children that it is not fair for you to fail, so we won't let you do it. We can't reward mediocrity and expect excellence. We can't denigrate and vilify successful people and expect other successful people to arise. When you penalize success or villainize success, what happens to success as a goal? My friend Linda says Congress belongs to cockroaches. I think you might be right. Well, they have a great deal in common with the cockroach. They just won't die off either. You know, if you've ever had to try to deal with them, and I have, you know that cockroaches manage to survive no matter what you do. They are incredibly expert at adapting. Hide, adapt, and come back. In that sense, I guess you could compare human beings to cockroaches because we do the same kind of thing. We tend to think of ourselves as maybe more valuable in the scheme of things than cockroaches, but without being able to see from God's perspective, I can't judge the value of human beings. I can only judge the value of human beings based on my viewpoint of the landscape of the world. And I happen to think that human beings are a valuable species. Even when we do really nasty things, like Michael was talking about last week's show, that, you know, we've managed to learn how to kill each other. Every time we invent something, we use it to damage somebody else. Yep, that's quite true. But we usually figure out, after we've done that, that maybe this isn't a good idea. Yeah? And we try a different way. Again, failure. Failure teaches us what not to do. If we're not allowed to fail, we'd be like Cal says, without fire, we humans are Bigfoot in the wilderness, and that's pretty much what we'd be. And the cockroaches would be coming to try to find one of us to put in their museum and say, look, guys, they really do exist. I can just see the cockroach guide explaining to all the little school cockroaches, yes, this example of Homo sapiens was found living underground in the Rocky Mountains. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm not God. And believe me, I'm not putting in my resume if I ever hear there's an opening. That's way more responsibility than I want. I am not God. I don't know what our purpose in the scheme of the universe is. And neither does any other human being, in spite of what they tell you. I only know, or try to know, what my purpose is in the tiny, small moment of time that I call my life. And part of my purpose, I believe, is to share what I have learned so that somebody else can learn something that they may take way beyond my experience and find out something that makes life even more wonderful than it already is. And life is wonderful. Otherwise, we wouldn't be so reluctant to leave it. With all its risks, with all its failures and mistakes and broken hearts and skinned knees and bruised egos, we all want to stay alive. And in order to do that, we have to learn how to fail. Because the world is not going to provide us with an easy path and everything we want the moment we want it. Technology is a wonderful servant, ladies and gentlemen, but it's a very poor master. It can give us quicker access to things we want. It can make achieving tasks easier. It can increase our leisure time so that we can dream and think and create. But it cannot live for us. And even in technology, when a new product comes on the market, there are inevitably bugs and glitches and failures. And the next generation of that product is without those bugs and glitches and can do more than the previous generation. Not because the cell phone designed its offspring, but because human beings did. And because they goofed with the first round, so they fixed it on the second one. Without the glitches and bugs and failures, we would still be at the tin can and string stage in communication. There are times, believe me, and when I'm, you know, constantly watching for kids secretly texting on their cell phones, that I kind of wish we were at the tin can and string generation. That's a little more obvious and a little easier to remove from the classroom. But hoping, my friend Cal says that Obamacare was hoping I see things like what? Like being an optimist? I'm not optimistic about Obamacare, and I never have been about socialized medicine. I figure that innovation doesn't come from same and equal being the same thing. Innovation comes from difference. It is our differences, ladies and gentlemen, that are our biggest values. Because if we all thought and did and created the same, nothing new would ever get invented. There'd never be any, the wheel wouldn't be here. I find it amusing that the push toward artificial intelligence makes the news so often. It's that God complex again. And there's no guarantee that AI will wind up like Mr. Data on the Star Trek series, or even Isaac Asimov's robots and his iRobot and Robots of Dawn and the rest of them. But when you look at, speaking of Asimov's robots, the main premise and the main programming of Asimov's delightful robotic intelligences put humans at the top of the chain of command. Because it's a human thing to invent. It's a human thing to dream. It's a human thing to learn from experience so that you don't keep making the same mistake over and over and over again. Machines do that. And people who are being taught to be machines do that. But real, live, human children of God don't do that. My friend Linda remembers the laws of robotics, the three laws. Okay. My friend Cal brings up a good point, too, that humans are creating it with inherent flaws, unlike God, which is perfect. It's because we ourselves are flawed. And because we understand that flaws can create havoc if they're not controlled, we don't want to, in effect, play out the twilight of the gods with our own creations. We want to be able to play at being God, but we don't want to accept the responsibility. And again, that kind of defines progressive liberal thinking, too. They like to play at being God. They want all the freedoms of godhood and none of the responsibility. Just as the middle school students I deal with want all the freedoms of adulthood and none of the responsibility. That's why I draw the parallel so often between the progressive mindset and the middle school mindset. Because both sets of people's thinking patterns do not understand that freedom and responsibility have to go together. Otherwise, you have chaos and destruction. And my friend Linda says that's so what kids do, as they are not mature yet. And she's right. And that's what progressives do for the same reason. It's a possibility. My friend Cal says perhaps the world will end before humans become obsolete. It's possible. I certainly don't know. But I live my life with the assumption that I'm going to have some more time, and one day I will be living my life under the assumption that I will have more time, and all of a sudden I'll wake up dead, wherever it is you wake up when you're dead. I don't know, and I can't say, what the end result of human beings on this universe will be. I don't know whether we will be a curse to the universe or a blessing. All I do know is that I am going to try to be a blessing. Whether it works out that way or not, I don't know. That's basically what most teachers do and why you have to be something of an optimist to teach. Because you have to have understood that you won't always succeed. You won't always be right. You cannot be all things to all men and remain a human being. And you have to develop a perspective that says, all I can do is give my life my very best shot. Develop those skills that can be of benefit to myself and others. Work hard to master things that are difficult for me, because it is that stretching of my mental and emotional muscles that will allow me to rebound from inevitable failure at something or many things. When I'm in a classroom, what I know and what I've experienced is my gift to the students I teach. There is no guarantee that they will see it as valuable. Many of them don't. If I expected to be universally loved, I certainly would never have gone into education. But we are telling our children that they have a right to expect being universally loved. And what's going to happen to them, ladies and gentlemen, and this nation that they will one day run through their actions or inactions, when they find out that, guess what? Not everybody in the world loves you. Not everybody in the world is going to give you what you want the minute you ask them. The shock will probably kill them, and that'll make the progressives happy, so long as it doesn't kill off too many, and there are still enough people to be good on the treadmill and make the energy to keep the progressives warm and comfortable. Have a caller on the line. Let's see who's calling in. Hello there.
It's the California crazy woman.
Oh, that California bird of paradise. Hi, Linda. How goes it, sweetie?
How are you? Oh, it's going pretty well. We're fortunate we have beautiful weather. It's sunny, about 68 degrees, just beautiful. And we are in the desert, and that's a problem because we have a drought. So I'm trying to do rain dances here.
I understand.
I know about the progressive mindset. And it's kind of sad because when you look at the picture of all this, I mean, just there's puzzles, pieces of the puzzle, and one of them is Common Core. The other, I think, is the current indoctrination system called the public education system, and it is very frustrating. I don't know how you deal with it. I mean, I know that you're an optimist, and I think we all are, because especially the Patriot Family people and people who get it, if we weren't optimists, we'd have given up a long time ago. I mean, we would have just gone ahead and put our tail between our legs and, you know, melted away.
Gone off in a corner petting our poor bruised ego and never talking to anybody again. You can tell that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's so many pieces to this. And then there's the environmental part. And when you – what's happening is all of these entities, all of these factions are feeding into the beast. And we have this dishonest Federal Reserve System, as Ron talks about, and – mm-hmm. It's so clear what they're doing and how long it's taken to do so. I'm almost at the end of the book of Creature from Jekyll Island, which is absolutely wonderful. And it really does tie in a lot of loose ends. It really does. It gives you...
I have to put it on my to-read list.
Yes, because once you... And you'll go zipping through it, because I know how you think and how you read and all that stuff. But... seriously, I'm at the end, and that's when I knew that I was getting the dots connected for me in this particular one, because he was talking about, he didn't come out and say Agenda 21, but I know exactly what he's talking about when he said they're going to regulate people through this environmental fake problems that they have created. That's just one of the pieces. And so this is where this Fabian socialism kind of all dovetails to one end, and that's that new world order, the cogs in the wheel. And this is why everything that's happening to us is so insidious. And it's a good thing that we have the strength to fight, because I'm not going down without one.
Oh, it was funny today. I did five different jobs today. 6th grade English, 7th grade English, 8th grade English, covering the front door and signing parents in when they came to pick up their kids.
Wow.
And then covering 6th grade English again twice. And in the 7th grade English class, it was a self-contained, very small group of kids who have great troubles with learning. But one of the kids was saying something about, everybody keeps telling me I'm unteachable. And I said, well, why do you believe them? And he says, well, they just say it over and over again. And I said, well,
yeah.
And, well, this kid is a handful, trust me. And he said, I know how to do some things. And I said, yeah, you do, and you were taught them, right? And he said, well, yeah. I said, well, focus on that instead of what people say. You're not, you know that's not true. Because you know how his dad is in construction, and the kid works with his dad, and he's good at it. And I was explaining to the class that my David, even spell check couldn't figure out what the heck he was trying to say, but he could visualize something three-dimensionally and then build the darn thing without a blueprint. I can't do that. If I
had to
do that, Linda, I'd starve to death. You know, I couldn't possibly do it. But two of the kids in class said, well, I can do that. I said, well, that's great. That's a talent. That's something really super great. I don't praise children just to make them feel good. I give them earned praise. That is a talent. That is an amazing talent. And there's a place for it. But it's not the talent that you need to understand the meaning of a paragraph when your reading level is 4 grades below the grade you're in.
Right. Well, what you're doing when you're saying, you know, basically you're giving encouragement where it belongs to the child, and that's the very good aspect of teaching. You know, they have to have optimism in their own worth, and it has to be earned. You know,
it has to be based on something that's real. It can't be false optimism.
No,
It's kind of like, the tent revival preachers and so on and so forth who basically were con artists, okay? The rainmaker type thing. Yeah, they gave people lots of optimism and lots of rah, 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 and as David used to
put it,
ray, rah, God. But it was fake. It was based on untruth instead of truth. You can't promise people the moon and then tell them it's your fault that you didn't get it, because it's not possible for me to reach up and grab the moon.
Well, I think that's one of the definitions of being a charlatan, is what these guys were.
And what we're doing now in public education is we are being charlatans, because we are not educating kids in the way that they need to be educated to be able to support themselves as adults. Not everybody needs to be able to read Shakespeare, for God's sake. And putting kids who can't and never will understand Shakespeare in English classes with kids who can and will defeats the purpose. This whole... I'll go crazy on collaborative learning in a minute, and then let me back off, because it is one of my biggest problems with the way that the schools are working, because you don't teach children that they are owed success when you know darn good and well they're not going to achieve it in that arena.
Right. Well, and I think just the lie that everybody is owed a living anyway is horrible, false premise. And, I mean, this is... Keynesian, this is Marxism. I mean, and it's an old big lie, basically, and it's not good to do that to children. And I think, now you can correct me because you know the roots of all these words, but to educate is to bring forth the knowledge and to educate someone. I mean, you can self-educate if you at least mm-hmm. have the basics. But
yes.
the kids you're dealing with, my God, I mean, I don't know how they're even surviving yep. at all.
Well, the bad part, so many of them, Linda, are going to wind up either on public assistance or they're going to wind up in a jail or a cemetery. Because
well,
they're not
and the other
going
alternative is that $10 an hour minimum wage government job.
Oh,
dog and a wheel.
Just the idea of the kid I was talking about handling anything that I have to submit to the government makes me shudder.
Right.
Oh, Lord, believe me. Putting that kid in a bureaucrat's cubbyhole dealing with tax returns when he should be out there building houses.
Right, right.
You know?
Or something, right.
Yeah, the houses are going to fall down because his expertise wasn't there to keep them up, and nobody's tax returns will be collated correctly because he doesn't have that skill, but by God, he's got a diploma that says he went through high school, so obviously he fits in this niche. It's the insanity of it. Well, liberalism is a mental disorder. We all know that, at least the version of it, the current version at any rate.
Exactly.
But yeah,
and you know, it's sad because what I think what happens is when you take a, like say a one-year-old and that's starting to be a little bit more cognitive of what the surroundings are, you know, rather than just a warm blanket and a, you know, a nice chest that mom has for them, then their lust for learning is usually at a very good peak from there till about 10. And if you screw it up between that time and squash it, that's what's been happening. And this is so sad because, I mean, I've seen these munchkins that my sister takes care of, and they are phenomenal. I mean, they have these eidetic memories that just blow your mind. I mean, they're amazing. And and we help these kids whenever we help stimulate them, and we let their little brains do what they're supposed to do and just let them soak it in and enjoy it. And that's, I mean, this is what it is to educate. And if you continue on that path, it can be anything they want if they've got the ability. Mm-hmm. I mean, not everyone's going to get A's. Not everyone's going to be a C student. So, yeah.
Today's various jobs were absolutely amazingly apropos. Because in the sixth grade English, it was the contest on public speaking how-to. And they mumbled, and you couldn't hear them, and they didn't pronounce their name clearly enough to be able to write it, for me to write it down on the rubric I was grading them on. In the seventh grade class, that was the one with the boy who knows how to set a footing for a house, but, you know, you might as well forget understanding a paragraph. The eighth grade class was doing a persuasive essay basically spending a lot of time chit-chatting, half of them, and the other half were actually writing things. And I used I was explaining to them that being able to use language persuasively is a skill you will need when you enter the real world, because sooner or later you're going to have to sell something to somebody, whether it's a concept, an idea, pitch your business to a bank to get a loan to expand, present a new project. You need to know how to persuade people by marshaling facts and arguments that this course or this idea is viable and important and deserves to be supported. You also have to be able to use language well. And I gave an illustration that for me, and this goes back to the failure again, when I was in high school, I drifted into verbosity quite easily when I was writing. And I had a really good English teacher who said to me, you need to curb this. So I'm going to suggest you start writing haiku, which is the Japanese poetry form that has three lines, 5, 7, and 5. That forced me to make the minimalist, perfect choice of words to create a snapshot. And I illustrated it. I made up one and stuck it on the board. And one of the young ladies in the class just was totally blown away by this. And she asked me at the end of the class, she told me she was writing a story, and she asked me, would I please look at it and give her constructive criticism on it.
Wow.
Now, that child is going to go somewhere.
Sure.
Because she saw the link.
Yes.
She saw
connected
the link.
The dot. Yep.
She will go somewhere because she didn't want me to tell her she was wonderful. She wanted me to help her.
Her, absolutely. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Good
oh, I have interest. I have interesting days, darling. I have really interesting days.
Yes.
Oh, it's one of the
reasons.
Have,
it's like an emotional roller coaster. High, low.
Oh, yeah. Just about every day is like that, honey. Everywhere from total frustration, I want to bite a desk, to walking on air because somebody learned something. You know.
That's funny. Oh, my God.
That was yesterday, doing a collaborative class. And today, when the regular teacher was back, they were perfect angels. Yesterday, they were the class from the nether regions, demon tails wagging. It was. The contrast was
Lord.
Amazing. It's why I never get bored at work, honey.
That's for sure. Oh, with those kids, how could you? Oh,
you
my
can.
Gosh.
Frustrated, angry, ecstatic. Ready to commit infanticide at a moment's notice, looking forward to a scotch at the end of the day, any of those things. But bored, no. Not even sitting at a desk in front of the doors making parents show me their driver's license before they can get their kid, you know. Okay.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I'm going to let you run the rest of the show, and thank you so much for taking the call and doing what you're doing and teaching these kids one way or another. And I'm going to go back to the chat room and say, you know, enjoy the
Thanks
rest of the show.
Thanks for calling, sweetie. It's always great to hear your voice.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry I couldn't be there for your show last night, but after that...
Nobody could. I couldn't get... Yeah. No one could get in.
Apparently, BTR is having problems because I know you must have tried to get in before 6:05. I mean, but there was nobody here.
Well, actually, I couldn't because I was helping a neighbor when I did sign in. It was I had to refresh 5 times. It didn't work, and I went into default player. That was the only way I could hear it.
Yeah,
so.
apparently a lot of other people are having trouble with it. Again, here we go again with a failure, a glitch that's probably going to make it better and easier and smoother to get in once they fix it. Yeah.
Okay,
learn
honey.
From your failures, Bald Talk Radio.
Absolutely.
And we'll all be happier. Thanks again,
thanks
honey,
you,
for calling in. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. My friend Linda, that California bird of paradise, that rare creature, a non-liberal and non-progressive, who actually still lives in California and hasn't fled the state yet. The woman has more courage than I could summon up in a million years. I want everybody in the chat room and all of you listening out there to know how much I appreciate your being here tonight. It matters that you're here every week with me, and we can share our views, our perceptions, and maybe find a little bit of hope among all the dark clouds that we happen to have rolling down on us from Washington right now. I'm hoping that you gather something that gives you enlightenment, entertainment, optimism maybe. Maybe just a laugh every now and again when you tune in here to Patriot Education. And I hope that's the case for all of you when you tune in to our other radio shows. There's something for everybody through Patriot Families here on Blog Talk Radio. And we look forward to seeing you and hearing you every time we broadcast. I would like to also say that I lost a friend last weekend. She was 6 years older than I am. And we came to know her, my husband and I, when she stopped by the vegetable stand my husband used to set up on the road outside our house with the bounty of his vegetable garden that we couldn't use either by canning or cooking immediately. He believed that it was important to share out of your own abundance. And this dear lady came by, and a friend was with her, and the friend was sure that there was some kind of scam going on, that nobody just gives stuff away, and they didn't know my husband. But she did, and she liked him, and she became a friend. And I hope that her abiding faith in her Savior, induced God to open his arms to a very loving daughter, a woman who cared about people, was interested in them, and who will be remembered. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. We only have a little bit of time left. I hope to be back again next week, same time, same station. Good Lord willing, as they say, and the creek don't rise. Although that might happen. We're supposed to have major thunderstorms tomorrow and snow again next week. Virginia has been enduring winter for the first time in, about 10 years, and we're all a little bit confused about it. We've kind of forgotten what winter is in the South. But we are definitely experiencing it this year. And to my friend Cal, I don't question. I know, as well as hope, that my friend is with her Savior now. All of us, ladies and gentlemen, have something to give, whether we give it in a classroom, in a factory, on a farm, on a radio show, in a chat room, or just talking to a stranger chance met in a grocery store. We all have knowledge and life experience from which we have learned things that have benefited us, those we love, and those we encounter. We are all teachers, ladies and gentlemen, not just by precept, but by example. How we deal with our world and how we deal with each other is what will be weighed when we are done with this first grade of our existence. Remember that you're a teacher, ladies and gentlemen, and be aware of what you're teaching. Because who you are is what you teach. Make what you teach the very best you can be. And my optimism and my hope will be justified. I hope you'll join us here on Blog Talk Radio next Thursday at 6 p.m. for Patriot Education. Visit our website at www.patriotfamilies.com for links to our other radio shows. Believe in yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, not because you're promised everything, but because you have the opportunity to do and be anything. It is the potentiality of each of us as individuals that makes our species survive. It is the hope that we can make tomorrow better than today. And we will only go down into the dust when we lose that hope. Remember, in addition to teaching who you are, teach that hope as well. And whether you live to see a better tomorrow or not, know that the better tomorrow will come because you were here. You may not get a ribbon for participating. You may not get a trophy for showing up. You may not find out until you left this first grade and gone on to second just exactly what your purpose was. But know that you have one and teach it well. Good night, all. Thanks for being here. And as always, all my love to my greatest fan. See you all next week here on Blog Talk Radio for Patriot Education. Blessed be all. Good night.